Hey, welcome to Integrating Psychedelics. I'm your host, Jenny Wiener. I'm a Philadelphia-based ketamine-assisted psychotherapist, and I also provide integration therapy virtually for people in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Colorado. Those are the states I'm licensed in. And this is my podcast all about psychedelic integration, talking to different people in the field and the psychedelic space about different frameworks of integration, different aspects of it. You know, it's sort of becoming more commonly accepted that integration is really crucial to making the most of psychedelic experiences, especially when using psychedelics for therapeutic purposes or healing purposes, that integration is really where the magic happens. So I just love exploring that with different people. For today's episode, I asked Beth Weinstein to come on. If you are in the psychedelic space already, you most likely know Beth. She is really a powerhouse and serves as a business coach to psychedelic entrepreneurs, as well as other people in the transformational healing space, not just working with psychedelics. So I wanted Beth to come on because a lot of people who are on the medicine path at some point find themselves called to work with the medicines in some way, whether that's serving medicine, whether that's helping integrate people, whatever it is. A lot of people, after feeling how the medicines are transforming their lives, feel called to serve other people in this way. So I wanted to have Beth come on as someone who interfaces with so many people on that particular part of the path and get her take on it and her story of how she ended up doing what she's doing. So it's such a passionate and powerful episode. I hope you'll enjoy it as much as I did. Hi, Beth. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me here.
Thanks so much for being here. I have listened to so much of your podcast and read so much of what you share and put out in the world. So I'm so excited to connect today.
Great. I'm excited.
So just to start, I would love to know how you got onto this path. And yeah, you occupy such an interesting role and niche in the psychedelic community, but how did you get onto the medicine path?
Yeah, that one's always interesting to me. You know, I always blame growing up in California. I grew up in the Bay Area, outside of San Francisco in, you know, the 80s mostly. And I had always been a very curious kid, even at a quite young age, like 7, 8 years old. I remember having my very first kind of what I would call a like spiritual experience. And I don't really know what it is today, but, you know, I had these like activations where at a young age, I would just lay there on the grass in my yard and try to go into my brain and figure out what made it work and what was in there. And I don't know, it was like the strange thing. I was always curious, like, what else is there? And really trying to understand the nature of being human at a very young age. I actually remember the very first moment where I realized that humans die, like we die, we just die, and then what? And I remember at a very young age questioning, like, well, then what's this all about? So I kind of felt like I was always in this path of questioning and trying to understand the human condition and the brain. And of course, you know, blame California. I was introduced to something like marijuana at a young age, probably like 12 or 13. And, you know, kind of at that age, didn't even really understand what it was other than it was maybe like kind of a little rebellious. But, you know, I remember the first experience of having that altered consciousness at a you know, fairly young age, like 12 years old. And then I got really into going to dance clubs, believe it or not, at a, you know, young age. There were these youth clubs where we lived, where you could go under the age of 18. And so I was out dancing, and there was this one night where I met someone who gave me a hit of acid. And Again, it's kind of funny because I was 14 years old and I had a curfew and I had to be home by 10 p.m. and I didn't quite know what acid was all about, but I had already smoked pot and kind of, known a fair amount and just been kind of curious. And I took the acid because this person, I said, "Well, why don't I save it for later?" And I remember he was like, "No, just take it now." And then of course I had a curfew. I didn't know how long this acid was supposed to last or what it was supposed to feel like. And it's funny because I took it and then forgot about it. And by the time I got home and started brushing my teeth, the acid kicked in. And I had parents at home in the other room, asleep. And I had to spend the entire journey in my bedroom being quiet with no music on
Oh my
and
God.
just kind of going inward. And I will tell you, I have very clear memories of that experience. And one of the most powerful moments was like really realizing that there was so much more than meets the eye, that there was so much more potential in our minds, in our realities than we thought. And not to say I had these like big God experiences, but I definitely had that moment of awareness that like, wow, there's so much more to this human condition than we think, and just that kind of deeper knowing. And so from that point forward, of course, then I kind of got into psychedelics at that young age, 15, 14, 15, 16, then started going to raves and getting into, MDMA and other drugs and also experiencing, that feeling of like the staticness of, the dancing, the movement, the mindlessness of mindfulness of where these, substances would take you. And when I went to college, I actually ended up studying psychology. And of course, my favorite classes were the neuroscience classes and really got into deeper understanding of the brain. And it was kind of like one thing led to another. I would say I was kind of a partier. So I was going out dancing and taking drugs. And some of it was definitely more in the destruction drug path. And then some was definitely more in the awakening drug path. I would say MDMA and the rave culture at the time, and this is like the 90s and early 2000s, it was definitely more of a spiritual experience, and it wasn't, maybe super destructive until maybe later on. I started kind of going in that destructive route and realized that I was heading into a downward spiral of, abusing drugs and getting, like drinking and numbing and using these to really escape my miserable life, and not really tackling a lot of what was really at the root of the issue. Of course, through a series of initiations, and I was, getting help and getting therapy and having all these other spiritual experiences. I remember the first moment where I had intentionally had a psilocybin experience that was out in nature that was like a very different experience than I was used to, where it was like, well, wait a second. I am starting to realize I am that tree and we are all connected and really having these like spiritual experiences, even through these quote recreational experiences like raves or festivals or out hiking or, with friends or in these kind of more conscious settings of recreation. And then I was introduced, from the psilocybin kind of world. I had some other spiritual experiences with actually, with these synthetic drugs, including drugs that would be considered like fully recreational. But having these really deep moments and profound, like life-changing experiences. And then, of course, by the time I was introduced to a medicine like ayahuasca, it was like I was then already on this Buddhist path and meditating and, I'd always been in and out of like transformational programs. I had done all the Landmark in the late 90s, explored like and been reading all these self-development books and kind of been on this spiritual awakening path. And I think by the time I first sat with ayahuasca, I remember my intention was to only do it once. And it was at this really pivotal time in my life where I was going through a lot of changes and I had been really deep into meditation on this Buddhist path. And I think my intention was just to I remember it was really just to get a deeper understanding of what I already knew. Like there was really no other intention. It was kind of more out of just pure curiosity. And that first ayahuasca ceremony, and I realized this later on, many years later, took me to places that I have never been to ever since. I actually really believe on some level it gave me this deeply powerful literally life transformational experience on my very first ceremony for a reason. You know, I really never thought I would do it again. I thought it was a one-time thing. I never had any intention of getting into it. I totally was not, you know, involved with other people who were on that path. And my first experience was so profound and to the point where it was like, well, wait a second. I was just shown everything I've ever read about in Buddhism or, you know, any of these other spiritual paths for my whole entire life. And now I'm able to make sense out of these things, like on a deeper level. So then it was kind of like I just saw this potential. Like I saw, wait a second, there's so much more to this than I think I'm even aware of. And it was just so incredibly powerful and life-changing in that first experience. And I will say, it was also very hard to integrate. My very first experience, I mean, this was like 10 years ago, there were no integration coaches, there were no integration circles, the word integration didn't even exist in the vocabulary. I didn't actually have any friends that did it. The one friend that referred me was kind of not really involved, like he had never had that kind of experience. And I remember I had no one to really turn to, and I, believe it or not, turned to a DJ friend of mine who, not even a friend, like an acquaintance who I had known, had been on the meditation path and also worked with ayahuasca, but it was also part of this, you know, like kind of the rave culture and the festival culture. And I actually reached out to him and I was like, how do I make sense of this? So I thank him so much because he actually was also one of the people that helped me really understand the benefits of meditation. And that's kind of what just started it off. And then I just dove in. I mean, I think I was just going through such major changes, and not just like in my actual tangible life, but, you know, my spiritual awakening was like being very expedited and very fast, that it was kind of like I didn't really know where else to turn. And this was giving me like the visual insights to these other modalities I've been studying for 25 years. So it kind of just made sense. And then of course, you know, one thing after another, and some of these, like, you know, quote, and I do not say this lightly, but, you know, the quote miraculous healings, you know, I had some of those experiences where I was like, wow, that is something that I have been struggling with not just me, but like in my lineage and my ancestry for so many generations, like where is this potential? And that's where I just on a whim was like, you know, maybe I should just go to the jungle and like go deep with this. And that was kind of how it all really started opening up. So, that's kind of the long story short. I mean, there's so much more to it, but I really, you know, when I now look back on my entire story, I can see all the dots connecting. And, cause I, you know, honestly, I'm like, how did I end up like this? Like my own brother, it was one of those guys that had a mushroom, you know, experience as a teenager and hated it and like never did it again. You know what I mean? Like, how did I end up in this, on this path? But you know, I look at even being quite young and being this really naturally curious person, to know that there was so much more potential to what I knew our reality was about. Like there was just this knowing that like life couldn't really be what I was told and what I was programmed. And of course I was programmed by such, you know, like I come from a very typical American family that was very big into like, you go to college, you get a job, you make money, and then you die. Like there was nothing more to it. There was nothing about happiness. There was nothing about spirituality. I come from like a very strange spiritual background with all these like mixed religious messages growing up that were very honestly not only confusing, but a little traumatic. And so I think it was kind of like I needed something, you know, to ground into besides, you know, like, thank God I had the earth path at a very young age. Like, nature was always my teacher. I had the mindfulness, the meditation. You know, I think because I was always very athletic and very physical into dancing and sports, you know, there was always this awareness of how I felt. Like, I always felt, you know, that runner's high or that mindful space of, like, you know, pure flow when I would go for a, you know, a run or dancing. So that's where I can look back and say, okay, all of these pieces have come together and, like, put me on this path. And, you know, who knows? I'm still always waiting for, like, what's the next surprise? I have no idea.
Where were you in your life 10 years ago when you first sat with ayahuasca? What did your life look like?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was going through, you know, I had been programmed to go into this corporate career, and deep in my soul, like, even at a very young age as a kid, I knew I was actually here to be an entrepreneur. I used to actually play a game with my best friend growing up where we pretended to have these businesses and travel all over the world. And, like, we never had that kind of typical life. We always just kind of did our own thing. But I was programmed, you know, and I was scared and I was living in so much fear and anxiety from a very young age. You know, it's kind of like runs in my family. Both sides of my family have struggled with, like, anxiety and probably some level of, like, alcoholism and escapism and depression. And I had, you know, I had been in therapy, like, pretty much my whole, I would say almost my whole life, meaning, like, as a teenager in college, you know, in and out, just because, you know, it was kind of like I was raised, you have a problem, we can't deal with it, we don't know how to help you, let's just send you to a therapist. So, I had been really, like, on this self-inquiry path for a long time. And at the time, about 10 years ago, you know, I had been in corporate, I had lost my job, I had really started to question what this life was all about. You know, big thing that happened is that my dad died prematurely, and it really made me question, you know, he worked his whole life at pretty much one company, retired, you know, kind of was unhappy about the retirement, and then was only retired for, you know, however many years, not long, and then just kind of died. And I remember really being affected by that and really saying, like, wait a second, if that's what it's all about, like, why are we so miserable all the time? Why is everybody working these miserable jobs or, you know, not living the life that they want? And I was one of those people. I was really just so unhappy in so many ways. So, you know, I had started really reading books and diving into, like, well, what do I want? What do I want? You know, like, what is this, like, what's coming for me? And I knew I wanted a business. There was a business idea that I had been sitting on for years. And I had started working with my first coach. Actually, it was a career coach to get me a job. But the one thing that kept coming through is, like, well, what do you really want to do? And I was like, well, I really want to start this running clothing business. I had been a big runner and I had dreamed of this for 8 years. So I was really going through a lot of, like, big changes of, like, questioning, like, what do I want for my career and my work and, you know, like, life, and do I even want to live here? And what is this all about? It was also, you know, around, right after that big, you know, the 2011, 2012, and, like, you know, there's theories that these were, like, big spiritual activations on Earth. And, I was starting to have these kind of, like, huge awakenings, even though I had already been on this path of awakening, but it was like, there would just be these, like, pops of awareness where I'm like, oh my God, you know? So, it was a deep questioning. And I also was really deeply into the meditation and, like, kind of this living this mindfulness path of, you know, like, what I would call, like, the Buddhist path. So when the medicine came up, it was very strange because I had actually not wanted, like, I had heard about ayahuasca, but I had not wanted to work with it. It sounded really, like, too much and too scary. But then it was very strange. It kind of landed in my lap, and it was one of those, like, deep synchronicities that you can't ignore, where it just kind of came through like a certain person that was has been like a guardian angel in my life ever since I've known him. You know, it kind of came at the right time. And then it was kind of like, it just landed in my lap and it was like, hey, do you want to go sit with this person? And he's like the best of the best. And I was just kind of like, sure. You know, like it was kind of like all my other experiences. I had never really given it that much. It wasn't like a deep desire. It wasn't like I was searching for it either. It kind of just came to me. And, you know, the ayahuasca, I actually really didn't know what it did. Like I'd heard visions and, you know, purging, and I was nervous. Like I expressed to everybody there, like, I am very nervous. And I went in with really deep surrender. Like that was my only intention, was like, I'm going to do this once. I'm just going to surrender. I have no expectations. And honestly, that's probably why it was my most powerful ceremony to this day, is that there were zero expectations and zero, like, I wasn't trying to get anything from it. I wasn't trying to take. It was more just like full receptivity. But looking back, I don't think anyone prepared me for the level of what could have come through. And that's where I remember. And, you know, of course, at the time, I just assumed that everyone had the exact same visions that I had. I just thought it was like one of these universal experiences. And when I left there, and I remember talking to a couple people there being like, okay, so what do I do with all this information now? Like, that was a lot. That wasn't just like me going into my drama. I was dealing with like serious, like large scale, collective, you know, like visions that didn't make a lot of sense to me, where it was like, okay, that you just gave me a lot of information. Now I have this responsibility. What the hell am I supposed to do? And thank God for integration coaches now. I'm like, because it was, I mean, I'll be honest, and it's funny, this just came up recently where I was telling someone, you know, honestly, I came out of that very first ceremony feeling great, but also feeling kind of on the verge of suicide. Mm-hmm. Meaning it was just so big that I kind of question what was the point of living, you know, like, I mean, to honestly be shown, like, you know, in Buddhism, I'd studied the illusion of our reality for so long. And then I was taken there and I'm like, wait, now I can actually understand it. And not only that, I saw it and I stayed in it and I got to like witness this entire illusion that we're living in. Well, then what's the point? And I came out of that really thinking like, should I just quit working? Should I just move, you know, burn everything to hell? Should I just not live anymore? What's the point of being a human? Like, why are we even doing this whole BS? You know, it was a lot of that, like trying to make sense of the world. And I do believe on some level, like I still go through this, you know, we all, I think a lot of people get taken to this place of like, yes, there's beauty, there's awareness, there's gratitude, there's the open heart, there's the love. And then there's also like, what's the point of all this? Mm-hmm. And I will never forget my moment of integration was someone saying, okay, now you just have to go out there and, you know, like really live your truest, most authentic, like best life and like be in this like deep level of gratitude for this life. And I was like, okay, I can do that. You know, it was really, I mean, my therapist at the time didn't know what ayahuasca was. She honestly didn't really know much about any psychedelic. And, you know, eventually after a few years, I had to go seek out someone else who understood it because I needed to have someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. And thankfully I was led to, you know, someone who's, you know, kind of like an integration coach slash therapist slash spiritual counselor, and thank God she had really gone deep with these medicines, and that was what really helped my path. Like, you know, bringing in the somatic work, bringing in the actual medicine work, and deep, you know, like a deep path of like similar to my own path, someone who could guide me and understood everything that I was going through. And that's why I can't even tell you, I actually worked with mushrooms recently and it was one of the most challenging experiences I've ever had. And I'm like, God, I've been doing this for 30 something years and I'm still having these mm-hmm. hard experiences. And I'm like, How does anyone expect to get anything out of this without having support? Like, to me, it's a no, like, it's almost required. Like, it's a no-brainer that there's no reason to even work with these powerful medicines if you don't have someone guiding you to be able to integrate it back into your life. Because then it's like, then it just becomes like a mind thing. And it's like, what's the point, you know?
Yeah, I'm so glad you shared that because I think the message is out there at this point of how important integration is, but we don't often name actually how dangerous or risky it can be to not really appropriately integrate. That it's not just that it might not be that useful or beneficial, it can actually really be harmful. There can be this big void of like, well, now what? And what does it all mean? And why bother? How did you then sort of leave the corporate world and end up doing what you're doing now? How did that unfold?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I left the corporate world before I got into the sacred plant medicine on this level. A lot of it was really just those synchronicities where, I had been laid off of a job that I had given my heart and soul to, like quite literally, like worked my butt off, like soul level work. I loved and hated it at the same time. It was a great experience, but it was very grueling. It was like 13-hour days were the norm. It was a stressful environment. It was also kind of going nowhere. They had got bought out by a company, and of course, I saw my future coming. I was like, oh great, they just got bought out. Of course, my job was probably eventually going to get eliminated. I gave them my soul for 6 more months, and then of course, my job was just kind of like bye. And it's funny because part of me knew it was coming, and I said to myself, because I was in my 30s, and I knew on some level I needed to rethink my life. Like I could easily have just gotten another job in the same industry, but I had already kind of been through that path of like better job, better job, better job. And of course, I had a good job. I was making good money, but it was like, well, wait a second. Like I could just keep climbing these ladders to get paid more, but they're all the same thing over and over and over. And it was like misery over and over. And it was also getting to the point where I was like, where's this going? Like, where am I going to be in 10 or 20 years? Like, if I keep just saying yes to like the bigger paycheck, which, by the way, the bigger paycheck, yeah, it's nice, but it's like the happiness from that only lasts like, 2 extra weeks. And then you're like, okay. And then you don't actually have that much more money to show for it anyways. It's like, okay. And then your lifestyle just gets more expensive. So I started really seeing through a lot of the BS and also a lot of the future of where the world was going. I had worked for one company in particular that was like so misaligned with my values, where I was like, wait a second, where's the line drawn? Like, this is like nearly, it was, I mean, I'm not gonna name names, but they're one of the more evil companies on the planet, like in every which way possible, meaning like environmental, with people like gouging, I could go on, and a lot of people know about these. And I remember just being like, where's the point where we start to sell our souls? And, I was originally on the path to going into environmental science. Like I've been so connected to nature, and there I was working in an industry that was polluting the world. Like more than any other, one of the most polluting industries on the planet. And I was like, I can't do this. So I took a break and did that whole thing where I got laid off, so I knew I was collecting unemployment. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna cash in all my miles. I went around the world. I did the whole like backpacking, for a few months. And through that experience, I just had those moments of like pure awakening where I was like, I can't just get back into this. Like, I gotta make some changes. Because I just could see, I saw the future, and I saw how easy it is to just be stuck in like the world of golden handcuffs. And I know, I mean, I lived in New York City. I had a mortgage to pay. Like, I could, of course, like there's the reality of the world we're in. But then I was like, wait a second, I know other people who've done this. Like, I was friends with an entrepreneur who was doing quite well. I had some other friends who had started businesses. I was in New York City surrounded by other entrepreneurs, and I'm like, well, why not me? Why just them? So I started just taking steps. I did not do anything rash where I like just quit and like didn't have a backup plan. I actually moved into early stage tech startups, and it came through this like, you know, I signed up for this program, started learning about entrepreneurship, blah, blah, blah. And then I was offered a quote internship. I mean, literally, I was like in my 30s. I'm like, what do you mean internship? Like getting paid nearly minimum wage while I had like a corporate salary, you know, doing quite well. And I was like, you know what? Maybe this is the way into a different world. So I just started taking steps, and I started following what I now call those like golden nuggets of like, well, this is exciting. This feels good. So it was actually after a friend of mine had asked me to help launch his next vision, and he was an entrepreneur. He's like, you know what? Why don't you just help run it? Like, you could be the launch, but it was his dream. So I had been working for these early companies, helping them launch their dreams. I had been working corporate, helping other people grow their businesses. I had worked for a privately held company that was, you know, about 70 people and in the millions. And I was basically like really running the whole company. And I was like, wait a second, these are their dreams and I'm doing most of the work. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't I do this for my own dreams? Like, I really started questioning that. So when I went and launched my friend's business and got it off the ground, it was really fun and exciting, but I was like, wait a second, I'm barely making money. It's, you know, it's the early stage. I'm like, I could be launching my own dream. And that's when he actually gave me like a particular book, and I really just like dove deep, and I was like, you know what? What if I just started my dream? Like, what if I just took some little steps? And I had been thinking about this running clothing brand for about, you know, at the time it was like 7 years. I had been dreaming of doing this. And I was like, you know what? Why don't I just start to do it and see what happens? Like, you know, like kind of just approach it like it was a project with no attachments to how it went. And I kind of approached it like with, you know, like just for fun. And it was really interesting. I had been consulting, I had been helping him, I had been working at these tech startups. And then I had started my own business. You know, I had been putting this thing together. And by the time it like launched to the public, I started getting a little traction. It was really interesting. It was almost like quite literally the week. And it was like one of these signs from the universe where the week that I was consulting for these like two early stage tech startups, they both had to lay me off because they both couldn't afford to pay me anymore. They were literally like, okay, our budget is run out. They both laid me off at the exact same time that my clothing brand had gotten its first like press mention in like a big magazine. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should just go for this and like see what happens. So it was this moment of really just constantly being curious, managing my fear, which is the biggest, hardest part. It was like, of course I was super stressed out and scared and money and how am I going to pay the bills? But you know what? It was one of those moments where I'm like, if we don't give this a try, like if we don't put some effort into our dreams, like how are we ever going to know? And I knew, because I could start to feel like my soul was eating me alive. Like, mm-hmm. If I don't try this for at least, like, let me give it a year. If I don't give it a year and try it, how am I ever going to know if it's going to succeed? So I committed. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm not going to say no to consulting or jobs, you know, but let me give it a full run. And it was interesting what happened is when I started giving it the full run, you know, it started to take off. I started to get traction. And then people started coming to me over and over and over for help. Like, how did you start this business? Can you help me start mine? You know, can you talk to me? Can you have coffee with me? And it was interesting because I didn't think anything of it. I just started helping people. I was like, well, here's what I did. Here's what you do, blah, blah. Because I've always been naturally really good at this. This is kind of what I did in corporate, and this is what I did in the tech startups. I was always kind of that, you know, like operations person that just like got all the stuff done. Mm-hmm. And I've always been very good at, you know, business and entrepreneurship, you know, it was just very natural to me. So I helped all these people. And then a few years later, I started noticing, you know, like these people, I'd run into them a year or two later and they would be like, oh, I never did anything. And I'm like, but I told you everything to do. Why wouldn't you just start it? I gave you all the steps. And I started to realize that people weren't actually getting results from my like one coffee date or my one phone call. And I realized people need like accountability, they need support, they need help. And then additionally, at the same time, I had friends telling me, you know, Beth, you should just do this for a living. You're so good at this. Like maybe you should coach people and teach them how to start businesses or how to get jobs or, you know, be a career coach. And I was like, what? Like I didn't even really know there was such a thing as this. So I said to myself, you know what? The next person who asks me for help with their business, why don't I ask them to pay me and commit to a certain amount of time and then let's see what happens. And lo and behold, that's like my next person that came and asked me for help. I said, look, you know, you really need ongoing support. Why don't we just work together? And he hired me, and that was how I accidentally got my first client. And then, you know, I started helping some other people I knew. And next thing you know, I'm like, oh, this is a thing. And I really enjoy it. Maybe I should take this seriously. And you know what, this was, you know, by then I was really on the medicine path. And there was this moment on a dieta in Peru that showed me this vision that is to this day, it's so funny because I'm like, am I actually living that now? It showed me this vision of just helping my friends, like helping people just like my friends. Like I had friends that were herbalists and friends that were doing, you know, focal work and amazing, you know, healing work. And I was just helping my friends. And at the time, this vision just showed, well, if I'm able to help these people who have medicine and healing and, you know, herbs and voice work, if I'm able to help them reach more people, then we can actually make a larger transformation on earth because then more people are getting their help. And this vision just showed me this like beautiful, it was actually a quite beautiful vision of like having fun, just helping people that I resonated with, like people like my friends and people in the medicine community. And you know, I had read the Surrender Experiment right after that dieta, and I was like, you know what? Maybe I just go on the Surrender Experiment and see what happens if I just start helping people like that. And next thing you know, it just took off. I mean, it was the weirdest thing, but it was also like really listening deeply to what I believe is like the soul. Like the soul is guiding us on these journeys, and if we just quiet down and like observe and pay attention and actually take little tangible steps in the 3D, like it's like a co-creation. Like you start to have this interaction with a, you know, whatever we want to call it, like the spirit of your path or your soul or whatever, the divine, and it will work with you and it will start to create with you. And it's like, but that's again, the key is that I had integration support. I mean, honestly, from the time of my first dieta until like literally, I have an appointment tomorrow, I have not gone, and that was like, you know, 2016. I have not gone one moment without integration support. And that's why I'm like, integration is not a thing you do after one session. It's literally day to day to day to day to day. Like, integration is like this, it's like, how do we want to live our life? It's not just before, during, and after a ceremony or a psychedelic experience.
Yeah, and there, I mean, it feels like there are two parts. One, you and the fact that people were, you know, are sort of like magnetized to you for help with this work, but also the fact that so many people are reaching out and needed this support speaks to how many people are feeling called to work with the medicine and, you know, how many people are making professional changes coming out of their integration. And I'm curious, sort of, yeah, like how just your perspective on that and this sort of big shift of people feeling called to work with it as part of their path.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I keep having all these theories about, you know, because the world is like so many people are getting into psychedelics. And of course, now it's becoming like the Wild West where everybody's just like, oh, is this going to cure me? You know, I think there's going to be the people like me where it's like, I kind of had to learn the hard way to finally get support. Like it was, you know, a few years of working deeply with medicines, and I had support, but it wasn't like the right support. And I finally learned, like, because I actually came back from the dieta going through a really, really challenging period. And I was like, maybe I need someone who understands this. So I had to learn the hard way. And what I think is people are either gonna go into the psychedelic experience looking for these like quick fixes and realize, well, wait a second, I just did mushrooms and I'm still depressed, or I still have anxiety, or I'm still struggling with this, you know, this the same thing. And so I think people are going to learn like, oh, maybe if I get support, it'll like make it work better. And then I think there's going to be the people that, you know, cause I've seen this and I'm sure you have too, that maybe have to get taken to the edge of, you know, like a really bad experience or a really challenging experience, or, I mean, it's unfortunate cause we don't want it to go there, but you know, to like maybe dive in. Like I see this, I'm seeing this with someone I personally know right now who has just discovered, you know, like, and is saying yes to every ceremony there is, and is also, has been dissociating for pretty much his entire life. So it's kind of like, well, this is going to bring up a lot of stuff. So if you don't have support, it could actually make you feel worse. I mean, I know that's kind of what was happening to me. So I think people are going to start seeing like, huh, I expected to have this really beautiful ceremony that fixed all my depression. But what it did was brought up something I haven't thought about in 35 years that maybe I need to actually work out, because that is looping over and over and over in my energy system and my somatics, and it's not healed. You know, so it's been interesting to watch, because I have a lot of clients who are, you know, psychedelic integration coaches and psychedelic assisted coaches and facilitators and healers. And I do think what's going to happen is people are going to say, you know, oh, maybe I need someone who understands what I'm actually working with, meaning doesn't matter if it's ketamine therapy or if it's going on a dieta with ayahuasca or if it's MDMA, which by the way, seems like it's all rainbows and unicorns, and it's not always, because there's always stuff that surfaces. So I keep saying that I believe these medicines are actually going to get to the point where it's almost going to be that place of they're like, I mean, to me, they're almost useless if you don't have someone guiding you through the process. You know, it's like, yeah, it'll help maybe this much, but it could help like 20 times as much if you have the support. And I unfortunately, because again, I've seen this not only with myself, but other people, including clients, where it might take having some really, quote, negative experiences to wake up and realize like, huh, you know, maybe I should seek someone who's really like understands this and not just like go and do it. Or like, you know, there's also a lot of this in the air of like, well, if I just do more psychedelics, maybe I should just take more, take more. And it's like, yeah, well, there's going to be a point where that builds up, and the moreness is either going to lead to so much stuff surfacing that you have no choice, or, you know, unfortunately, we've all seen it. Like I've seen people have like full on like psychotic breaks, or end up in worse places than they were to begin with, you know? And so that's where I believe having these conversations around like the different ways psychedelics can go are really important. Meaning like, hey, not all people are even in the right place to work with a psychedelic. Like it can actually cause more trauma. It can cause, you know, reactivation if you don't have like the skills, or if you're not in your body enough, or you're not grounded, or you're like, even with me, it's like, you know, the mushrooms I worked with recently, I was going through so much that I was like, you know what? I'm going to take it really low and easy. And of course it was still super hard, you know, to also really know like, maybe it's not always the answer. And it's, I find it funny that being someone who's like out there in the psychedelic space, it's interesting to see how much that me, and not only me, but a lot of other psychedelic leaders are constantly saying, you guys, it's not the psychedelic. It's maybe, you know, it's not the answer. It's actually the opposite. It's like, okay, where is the being and the like really grounding and connecting and like, you know, really almost like preparing your body and your soul to then be able to handle the next level of a psychedelic experience. So it's been interesting to explore, you know, what integration is and where it's going and to see the world. You know, it's been kind of almost funny sometimes because, you know, people have these like, they want to have these like, I mean, I had a client this happened to last year where the client said, I went to go do this mushroom session and I really wanted to just feel so good. And of course it was all challenging. And it's like, well, that's coming up for a reason. You know, and then of course I'm able to see those gifts, but I think a lot of people place these expectations on this, these experiences being like, oh, this will just fix everything or cure everything. I wish it did because we'd all be Jesus by now.
Right. Totally. I imagine a lot of your clients are people who, you know, are on the medicine path and then feel called to serve medicine or support people with integration. I know we both feel strongly that like it's not my place or our place to say who is and isn't capable of doing that. But do you have any, like, you've worked with so many people doing this. I'm curious if you have any guidance for someone who's feeling that pull to do this in a professional capacity, like how to approach that?
Yeah, and it's very interesting working in this realm because I have, you know, I have my personal beliefs, which means I have some of my personal projections, and then I have personal boundaries, and then I also have like, look, there's a reality. And I always recommend people listen to this one episode I did in my podcast called Why Trip Sitting is Not a Real Business. Because, you know, here's the thing, I won't work with people that are straight up facilitators for multiple reasons. Number one, I do actually work with psychedelic assisted therapists who are both above ground and underground. But people that are like, oh, I just want to give mushrooms to someone and sit there. First of all, it's not a good business and it's actually not sustainable and it's not serving the client either. So my clients that do end up, let's say, quote, serving medicine or giving medicine or working with people one-on-one, they have a different business built around it. It's kind of like the medicine is only a small piece of what they actually do. Mm-hmm. And I've had people call me up and say, hey, I want to join your mastermind program. I just want to give people mushrooms and I want to have mushroom ceremonies. And they live in, you know, a state where it's not legal. And I'm like, well, what do you expect me to help you with? You can't really market it because it's illegal. You can't be promoting it on Facebook, Instagram, or your email list because it's also illegal. And you also have to realize that you are putting not only yourself and others at risk, at a certain point where it's like, okay, maybe if you're really trained, you know, but these people that are like, oh, I had a few mushroom sessions and now I just want to make a business out of it. It's like, I personally draw my line where I'm like, well, I don't want to help you grow that because there's a certain level of responsibility where I do believe that, you know, and actually I did a Facebook Live about this recently because I had to give someone their money back when I realized she was not even close to being trained or skilled. Like she literally sounds like she had never touched psilocybin in her life and wanted to start giving it out to people. And I was like, wait a second, like, do you even know the depths of what could transpire? Have you been trained in any like kind of, you know, trauma or somatics? You know, it was really interesting. So there's a certain level of personal responsibility that I have to take where I've actually had to call a couple clients out and say, look, you have to know what you're really capable of holding. Because, like, for example, a few years ago, I had a client who said, I went to a 2-day BUFO training and now I want to give people BUFO. And I was like, look, it's not my job to tell you yes or no, but I will tell you this. It's no joke. Like, you can't just go handing Bufo out like crazy without being a certain level of like skilled in how to really hold that space and understanding the trauma and the energy and the somatics, you know, but I still helped him with other aspects of his business. So what I do with my clients is I help them build a business that is all about, you know, how it's, I actually have a whole diagram that I call the golden triangle. It's about how do you serve yourself? How do you serve your client? And how do you serve the greater good? Because all three really need to be in balance. And if you're just serving you, meaning you're just giving people mushrooms for, you know, thousands of dollars and you literally don't know what you're doing, that is pure ego and not in service to, you know, that's actually potentially harmful, even though, you know, it's not like, not to say mushrooms aren't harmful, but it's, you know, it's like whatever. It doesn't matter if it's mushrooms or ketamine or MDMA or whatever. But, you know, if you develop an offering that is actually really in service to why are the people coming to you? Why do they even want the journey? Why are they seeking a psychedelic experience? What are their pains? Like, what are their challenges? And what is it that they are looking for? That's where you ask, okay, well, what is actually serving them? You know, maybe it's then an integration container with some, you know, a couple, you know, one-on-one sessions, you know, like worked into the container. You know, I've had clients serve, let's say, someone with a eating disorder, someone who's going through recovery, someone who's dealing with parenting, someone who's dealing, like I've had a few clients actually specialize in like sexual trauma and sexual healing. So of course, you know, the one or two or even three psychedelic sessions are not going to cure someone's sexual trauma. But if you hold them inside of a journey in a container that is teaching them, you know, other things or walking them through embodiment, you know, exercises or whatever kind of other healing modalities, and then you work in a session or two or three, that's a very different thing than just handing someone a pill and watching them and hoping that their sexual trauma is healed, you know? And that's where I think more and more we're going to see that, you know, even if you just hold space, it's like, it's still not the answer. So that's where I say to people, really, you have to ask yourself, like, where, like, what are you truly capable of? Like, take your ego. That's like the number one thing. Like, you really have to get your ego in check, meaning the part of you that thinks it's easy money, or the part of you thinks that it's kind of fun, or the part of you that thinks, oh, I just want to save people, or I just want to help people. Hey, there is a way to help people and be in integrity with where you at. And here's the thing, like, you might be someone who's done a lot of psychedelic work in your life, and maybe you are capable of actually helping people like where you are now without any other like quote training programs. I actually think that's totally fine. Because some of these training programs, while I think they're very good, unfortunately, I'll have to say, like, most of my clients that have gone through them, they're like, well, it was really good, but I didn't learn anything I didn't already know, because I've been on my own integration path, because I've been on my own journey for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. So that's where you have to ask yourself, like, okay, what's your actual journey been? Because to me, no training can replace your own embodied experiences of knowing what you went through. And that's where I always say, I have this analogy of being on a mountain, like we're all climbing mountain, like one gigantic mountain, there's no end to the mountain. And if you're at, you know, 800 feet on the mountain, you know, maybe you can help someone who's at 600 feet or 400 feet. But if you're at 800 feet and someone's trauma or someone's life experience or whatever it is they come to you with is way beyond what you're capable of, you know, like if someone came to me and said, Beth, I really need help healing my complex PTSD from, you know, incest and rape from my childhood and being brutally, you know, beaten by my father over and over, I am resourced enough to hand them to someone else who can handle that. Even though I actually know a pretty fair amount about that and I've been through a lot of it myself, I know my limits are only so far. And that's where I think these days, and it's going to come up so much over the next few years, it is everybody's personal responsibility to really check in with themselves. Like, okay, is this really coming from the place of like my heart and soul that wants to help someone? Or is it also coming from like the ego or a God complex or a I want to save everybody complex? Or, you know, I mean, I've literally had people say, well, if I can charge a few $1,000, isn't it just easy money? By the way, I always tell everybody this, go make a spreadsheet and do the math to find out how much you would actually have to charge and how many clients you'd have to have. And it's actually not really a sustainable business. And it's not only that, you have to remember the amount of time and energy and effort that goes into holding these spaces. You know, so again, it's like, we really have to start thinking about even psychedelic assisted therapy. And Rick Doblin says this, like I've interviewed him a few times and he literally says this in the interviews. It's not the psychedelic experience. It is so much more than that. You know, it's this container that you're held in. It's the journey that someone is walking you through for X number of, you know, maybe it's just takes you a few months, or maybe it's like, for me, it's been, you know, whatever it's been, 10 years, like, you know, to me, it's never ending. So that's where I really say to people, it is great that you're called to the path of integration coaching or, you know, space holding or a little of both or microdosing or healing. Like, it's great. I have a ton of clients on this path, and there's a way to do it where it's really in service to them and the greater good, and it's reducing the amount of harm. And honestly, what I've seen, and I've seen this, you know, I literally have like videos and you know, like testimonials of clients saying this. My clients that approach it from this bigger picture of just like, it's not just like an integration session and bye, but from this deeper path of service, what happens is their clients have huge breakthroughs. Their clients are literally having life-changing experiences, and that's what we want. That's the whole point of the psychedelic path, is it's not just take a psychedelic and hope that things change. It's like, I hate to say it, got to do the work. You got to show up. You got to be consistent. It has to be integrated into the day to day. That's where the true healing is. And I can say this because I mean, I have countless things that I've and I never thought I would say this. I actually, it's a lot to say the word healing. Like I don't even use that word much, mm-hmm. but to say I've actually healed certain things that I had spent 25 years in therapy over, like it's a miracle. And that would only have occurred because I had ongoing support, I invested into it, and I showed up for it. And I did the work, you know, and it wasn't always easy. There were definitely beautiful moments. But I do think this is the world we're in now. Like if we want to see a transformed planet, you know, we have to like all be doing the work, including all the coaches, including all the therapists. And of course, you know, all my clients are, you know, and this is where I say like, yes, you can keep learning and training. Like I'm always growing, learning and training, and you can still help people at the same time. Like it's a constant path of evolution. You know, my therapist isn't just like done, you know, my shaman doesn't quit doing his dietas. You know, right. It's like, we are always, and honestly, I would run far away from someone who said, oh, I'm done. Because it's like, if you're not continuing your own evolution, like you're not able to help others in their continued evolution. You know, so it's like, that's where I think, you know, it doesn't matter if you're an actual, like just straight up facilitator or someone who's doing a combination. I think it's really, really important to do our deep work to really like come from the heart and come from this path of service. And, you know, and also realize we're all human. Like, of course, everybody makes mistakes, you know, but also keep our ego in check and have that mirror of having someone say like, you know, like, is this really in the highest and best for both of you, you know, for the golden yes. triangle of all three? Because if that golden triangle is not in balance, like we have an imbalanced world. And unfortunately, we come from that previous, you know, paradigm of like everything used to be, you know, the old masculine paradigm was all about me. This is the corporations that are, you know, pillaging the planet. It's like it's that's all imbalanced in one realm where they didn't think of the greater good, where they didn't think of the other people. And that's what we're all trying to change in this transformational world of bringing it all into balance. You know, how do we serve ourselves, the other, and the greater good of all concern, you know? And that's where I think this is going to be such a big lesson in the psychedelic space, especially as we see more and more, like, I mean, thank God, I don't want to jinx it. I pray that everything just goes really well. But I'm pretty sure we'll hear more and more, like, horror stories. And I mean, even, honestly, even me, I'm like, I've had a couple experiences where I'm like, gosh, even I've had a really negative experience. Like, even the pro, you know, like a person who's been doing this 30 years has had some, like, not so great facilitators. And I've learned that lesson, you know, due diligence and education and really trusting, you know, like your heart and soul, like, does it feel really right for what you need?
Yeah.
Long-winded answer, I know.
No, so good. I don't know if you heard that roll of thunder outside my window, but it felt like you reached this, like, amazing crescendo. And then, yes, she responded. That was so awesome.
I get passionate.
I love it. I so agree too. You know, I was deciding recently about, like, one of the upcoming psychedelic conferences and deciding whether to go and, you know, looking at the price and the flights and the couple thousand dollars. And then, of course, when you work for yourself, it's really like twice as much because you're not working while you're there. And I was like, I think that time and money would be better spent on my own medicine work. Like, I'm going to save it, bookmark it for that. I think I'll get more out of that. So,
yeah, if it makes you feel better, some of these conferences are like the same old.
You know.
They're kind of fun. They're kind of like, I shouldn't say that because I'm actually speaking at one of them, but
I mean, the community is always amazing. It always feels good for me to be in community, but yeah, there are all different kinds of community. So
there's always more too.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much, though. How can people get in touch with you, work with you, learn from you?
Well, you're free to check out, you know, my website, BethAWeinstein.com. I'm on Instagram, BethAWeinstein, my podcast, which, by the way, the name is officially shifting this year to Medicine for These Times.
Oh, instead of,
yeah, it's funny. That was the original name. And then there's this stupid thing called algorithms. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ugh. And everybody's like, you have to have the word psychedelic in there. I'm like, really? So it's called The Psychedelic Entrepreneur. Medicine for These Times is the tagline, but it is actually just going to be Medicine for These Times, hopefully by this spring. I'm on all the social medias, and yeah, you can just check it out. I have a couple free downloads, including one about how to start and grow a psychedelic business. I do a lot of free trainings around this intersection of being on the medicine path and coming into a transformational business that is in service to others. You know, I do have a lot of programs that help people who are called to this path of being of service, whether it's in the psychedelic space or not. Not all my clients are in the psychedelic space, but they are all in the healing, coaching, transformational world. A lot of therapists, people who are really looking to grow and reach more people and make a difference in the world. Because I really believe more. I mean, honestly, every single day I say to myself, I really think we're at like an all hands on deck situation. And I think it's only going to get harder and more intense. And I do believe like we need all the healers and all the coaches and everybody who's called to this path of service to really like step it up. Meaning if you're only helping one or two people right now, like great, it's better than none. But like there's so many people out there suffering. And we all know this because we hear these stories every day. And there's a lot of people that don't even know where to turn. You know, it's like there's maybe even people working with psychedelics that don't even know there's such a thing as psychedelic integration coaches or people to help them or psychedelic informed, you know, therapists or coaches or healers. So to me, it's kind of like this is my soul's mission is to help people like you guys get out there so we can have a better world, you know, so we can actually make it through these times, you know, without it being more and more challenging. Like I really am an optimist and I see a lot of hope. And so that's where I keep saying like, you know, if someone's listening and they're like waiting or like not sure. It's like, what are you waiting for? Like, are we really waiting for the ultimate, like being on the edge of destruction? Or are we really like all invested into this path of awakening humanity and healing and being able to create this transformed planet? So that's where I really say, like, let's get the bigger picture into play and like get out of our own little personal egos. It's like scared of, and I get it. It's like, I went through that, but stop being in the fear of putting yourself out there or taking the first steps and think about the larger picture of people that really need help. I know I'm very passionate about this.
I love it. It's so inspiring. And yeah, gives me a lot of hope for the future of this community, this work, this path. Thank you.
Hopefully.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. It was great to be here.
So that's the show. Make sure to check out the show notes for Beth's full bio and all the links where you can get in touch with her, access her offerings, follow her on social media. And if you're liking the show, if you liked this episode, it would really mean a lot if you gave a positive review or rating or subscribed or shared it. However feels right for you, it really goes a long way. I'm hoping to have some more episodes in the pipeline and to you soon. So stay tuned and thanks for your support.